Flow Health, a podcast that will help us understand our health better. I'll talk to experts who will demystify topics like stress, fertility, nutrition, and much more as we take steps to become the healthiest version of ourselves. Since being diagnosed with cancer in my 30s, I made it my priority to educate myself on my health. I discovered creating healthy habits and investing in yourself can lead to wonderful things. I'm so proud to say that this podcast is sponsored by ReproMed. ReproMed understands how daunting it can be to navigate your fertility journey, so it's their mission to put their patients at the center of everything they do. Their world-class team of specialists offer the expertise, empathy, and compassionate care needed to relieve your concerns and guide your decisions. With clinics in Galway, Dublin, Drogheda, and Kilkenny, they are never far away and will do all they can to help you start your family. Check out repromed.ie for more. I hope you are well today. It's been so nice to see the weather picking up and to be able to spend more time outdoors. We actually have just planted some fruit and vegetables in our garden, so we spent the entire weekend outside, so I feel nice and recharged for the week ahead. The Good Glow Wellness Program has launched. We are so excited for our first course, which is based around my pillars of self-care, which are mindset and habits, joy, self-worth, nourishment, and nature. And this is an alive course, so the content will always be there. So you can do this course at your own pace. So whether that's over a day, a week, a month, a year, it is entirely up to you. So we are so excited about that. Today, I am speaking to Dr. Kiva Hartley, who is behind Menopause Health, which is a new dedicated clinic to support women with all aspects of menopause. Her clinic offers women holistic advice and treatment to manage the full range of symptoms that are associated with perimenopause, which usually starts when women are in their 40s, and menopause. Dr. Hartley believes that the symptoms of menopause can be greatly improved by the correct medical intervention. And she is here today to talk to us about perimenopause and menopause, some of the treatment available. I love chatting to Dr. Hartley. I found her so approachable and so knowledgeable in the area of menopause. And it's so great that we can understand menopause and perimenopause and what's happening to our bodies in greater detail. So I'm so grateful to her for her time today. Dr. Hartley, thank you so much. I've been so looking forward to this podcast on the Good Glow Health today. So thank you so much for joining me.
Not at all, Georgie. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
I wanted to start with asking you probably the most basic question on the planet to you, but what exactly is menopause?
Yeah, so it's a great place to start. So menopause is the term that we give for when our period stops. So basically, if you've gone a full 12 months with no period, then you are menopausal. But really what it reflects is that our ovaries are no longer producing particular hormones. So estrogen would be the most important probably of those hormones. And again, that happens because our ovaries are not producing eggs anymore for us, which is what, you know, when you ovulate once a month, that's what you're doing. You're producing an egg. So when all of that slows down and that process stops and you stop producing hormones, that's it. And you're in menopause.
And tell us about your journey to this part of your work. So I understand that you were a GP before. And then have you just decided to specialize in this and open your own clinic?
For now, absolutely. Yeah. So I did my GP training in Ireland and then I moved to Canada in 2014. And while I was there, I was working in a really big, very busy women's clinic. So I sort of dedicated myself to women's health while I was there. And then over time, I sort of noticed that a lot of women who were being referred to me for other reasons, other women's health issues, were often throwing in symptoms as they were kind of walking out the door, or they were leaving, they would mention something related to menopause. And it just struck me, God, you know, these women are not, they're not dedicating the time to this at all, or they don't understand that it might be something to do with menopause. So I looked into it, I did some extra training, and then when I came home, decided I'm going to go all in, and now here I am.
Wow. And I'm sure it's so rewarding working with women on a daily basis, because I just know from doing this podcast and having lots of women listeners, it's just so nice to have that community of women who support each other.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, women are great, you know, and I think we're our own worst enemies. We're almost too good at putting up with things and getting on with life. So I think it's quite rewarding to kind of, you know, take stock and ask women, look, just stop, see where things are at, see how you're feeling. What impact is this having on your quality of life? And it's rewarding then to see, you know, it's gratifying to see people actually give themselves that time to their own, dedicated to their own medical health, their own well-being.
I think we could probably talk for 12 hours and still not cover everything. This is such a huge topic. And as I said to you before we came on, that every woman's journey is going to be different. So I just wanted to say that at the start. So I will probably generalize a little bit in this, and I don't mean to. But I suppose for me, one of the biggest learnings for me over the last couple of years is perimenopause. I wasn't really aware of it. Do you think we're getting better at discussing menopause?
It's absolutely, I think, something that a lot of women aren't aware of. And it's really important, because actually most women are more symptomatic during perimenopause. So they actually feel better when they get to menopause, and they feel worse in the run up to it. And yet it's only when they look back then, or if you kind of sit down and explain to them, these are the hormonal changes that were causing how you were feeling, and they look back and think, that makes so much sense. But at the time, they don't recognize it. So perimenopause is that few years before you get to your final period. And really what's happening is this, it's fluctuating hormones. So it's not that you're deficient, you haven't run out of estrogen, your ovaries are still producing hormones. But instead of this nice sort of calm up and down once a month sort of effect you had before, now you're kind of strapped into this, you know, roller coaster of hormones. You're overproducing estrogen at some points, and then underproducing at another time. And you're all over the place, essentially. And most people describe a lot of PMS type symptoms. So the physical symptoms would be things like maybe breast tenderness or bloating or headaches. And then a lot of mood and emotional symptoms in particular. That's what really strikes me, is the kind of irritability, the low mood, again, sort of that PMS type situation.
And is that what you say, like when you were working in the clinic and a woman would be on her way out the door and then she's kind of listing off symptoms of perimenopause, but it maybe didn't occur to her that she may be going through that? Like, what age would you see perimenopause happening?
So on average, it probably really starts to show itself from the age of about 45 onwards. The average age of menopause in Ireland is about 51. So about 5 or 6 years before that is when you might see changes. And the first obvious sign is a change to your period. So they might become less regular, or they might become more frequent, more regular, or even heavier, which is a complete pain. And so they might notice this change to what their normal periods had been doing before. And they can recognize that and say, oh, like something has changed. But they don't necessarily tie in the reason I'm feeling really irritable for 2 weeks out of the month, the reason I'm feeling really low for 2 weeks out of the month, and it's way worse than it was before. I'm not sure they necessarily join those dots into thinking, this is hormonal, what's going on with me?
Everyone seems to be talking about perimenopause at the moment. So it's great that there is awareness and conversation happening.
Well, and it's education is such an important bit of this puzzle. It's not, perimenopause is actually, it's difficult enough to really treat. Like it's a much more difficult thing to address than when you're in menopause and you're low in estrogen. Well, that's easy. We can treat the symptoms, or we can treat your low estrogen. In perimenopause, it's a bit more challenging. But I think fundamentally, understanding what it is that's causing how you feel is actually the biggest bit of the puzzle. And that's what makes people feel like, okay, I'm not going mad. I'm not alone. This is happening to other women. This is normal, and it will likely pass. And these are the things that I can treat or look out for.
And what is the reason, Dr. Hartley, that you decided to open a clinic?
Well, I think there's a lack of reliable information out there. Menopause is very vulnerable to misinformation and to, I suppose, people kind of clutching at straws or kind of almost out of desperation looking for a quick fix. And there's also a lot of misinformation about things like HRT. That's really sort of historical, and that's been there for years. And menopause is a really difficult thing to cover in 10 or 15 minutes. And when you're working as a GP, that's all you have often enough. It's difficult to really sit down. So I think from a general practice perspective, I found it really hard to do it properly with the time constraints that exist in GP And so the natural kind of evolution of that was to look, okay, well, then we just do nothing but menopause, you know, and give people the time to come in and talk and discuss what might be best for them.
And it's so good that GPs then know that they can refer people to you, and you are a GP. You've sat in that chair before, and now they know that they can send their patients to you and they're going to get the right information and the right care.
Hopefully, that's the aim anyway. Yeah. And I think the general practice background is actually, it's great because you can take a sort of overview, holistic approach to someone's health. It's not just gynecology. It's not just to do with someone's mood. It's not, you know, it's a real, like menopause, I suppose it affects every part of you potentially. So it's nice to be able to have that kind of generality and take a bit of an overview and help people with all the different facets of what's going on with them.
Do you think that menopause is something that women dread?
Maybe. I think it depends on what your experience is. As in, I think women who've seen their mothers go through really dreadful menopause are probably, you know, worried about what's coming down the line. And then there's other women, I think, who it doesn't even cross their radar, and they potentially fly through menopause, which is great. We think about 80% of women get fairly, you know, impactful symptoms of menopause. About 80% of women will have some menopausal symptoms, and about a quarter of them will have really severe, you know, like, in, you know, having an impact on their quality of life symptoms. So it's not a small percentage of the population, but do they dread it? I'm not sure that women are really aware of kind of what potential changes can happen with menopause. It's maybe a good thing to not dread it coming down the line. I think more than dreading it, it's just knowing where to go if you do hit a bumpy road and have problems, yeah, where you can get sort of credible, reliable advice, mm-hmm, getting the right information. I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah, I think it's so important to go meet somebody face to face to talk about these things and not kind of get down a rabbit hole of the internet, because you never know what you'd find there.
That's it. Yeah, the classic anecdote about that would be the knicker magnets. So there's like all these different products out there that people sell for treating menopausal symptoms, and most of them have no like scientific or you know, basis or evidence at all. But there is a brand out there that sell these magnets that you put in your knickers that are supposed to help with hot flushes. I swear to God.
Oh yeah. My God.
And amongst other things, that real kind of goop sort of approach of, you know, and I think it's great because there are a lot of you know, non-hormonal or non-medication ways of addressing your symptoms and helping you feel better. But it's just, I suppose you have to be careful that you don't end up spending your money on something that, you know, is potentially not going to work.
That's such an important point. I think it's really interesting what you said, that in perimenopause that sometimes the symptoms can be worse than actual menopause. So that's, I suppose, a good thing for people to look forward to.
Oh, absolutely. And like, you know, it's important to remember, like, menopause isn't an illness. It's not a disease. It's a normal part of aging for all women. And that's a great thing. But and so you don't have to treat it necessarily. But I think, you know, kind of going back to what we were saying about just understanding what's going on is the really important thing. But, and you're right, and knowing that maybe, look, if I'm feeling rough in perimenopause, but it's tolerable and I'm doing okay, this is going to pass more than likely. It's only a very small percentage of women who have symptoms that actually persevere for the rest of their lives. That's about 10% of women. But the other 90%, you know, it will have a shelf life and you will feel better. Hot flushes, I suppose, would be the common symptom that most people associate with menopause. So they tend to happen when you're hitting patches of really low estrogen or deficiency. We don't tend to see them at all in early perimenopause. So they're usually, if we're going by sort of average ages, they'd usually happen in the kind of late 40s, early 50s. And on average, they'll hang around for about 7 or 8 years on average. So it's still a really long time. It's not forever for most women, but it's still a pretty long time. Everything else, it's kind of hard to put a timeline on. So the mood symptoms, they tend to be worse in perimenopause. Irritability is by far the most common thing I would hear in perimenopause. That feeling of going back to kind of PMS, I'm okay for a couple of weeks and then I'm taking the head off everybody around me for 2 weeks. And then I'm okay again for a couple of weeks. And it's funny how, you know, when you ask someone like, is it cyclical? If you look back, is there a pattern? And it may not have occurred to them because they're so busy in their daily life. But when they look back, they think, actually, yeah, now that you mention it, like, I'm okay for a couple of weeks and then I'm like a dragon for a couple of weeks and then I feel, you know, so it comes and goes. And the other really disconcerting thing about perimenopause is that you can feel dreadful for a few months and then be absolutely right as rain. So your ovaries can basically kind of pick up on this, like, oh, we're, you know, we're slowing down a bit, we're not producing as much hormones. It's time to maybe, you know, put the accelerator pedal down, put the gas down. And they recover, especially in early perimenopause, they're able to kind of recover. And so you feel fine again for a few months, which makes people feel like they're losing their mind because they think, you know, actually, I'm grand. What was I thinking? I'm fine. And then it happens again.
And what is your advice to women when they come to you and say, I'm just irritated?
Well, look at the basics. So look at sleep is one of the big things, you know, make sure we're all irritable if we're not sleeping. So get some of the basic things right. Diet, sleep, removing things like alcohol, or at least cutting down, exercise, things that most people, I suppose, are familiar with having a good impact on mental health and how they're feeling day to day. Keeping a diary sounds really simple, but it's actually really effective. And again, helps you kind of notice, look, there's a pattern to this. And I know I'm going to be really irritable then next week. So what can I do to maybe address that in advance? Maybe I won't, you know, book 20 million things for me to do that week because I know I'm going to be under pressure. So working around it a little bit can be helpful. There's a thing called cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT. Ton of evidence to show that that can actually be really, really helpful in both perimenopause and menopause. And there's great online, you know, workbooks. There's really good counselors out there who specialize in CBT. So that can be really helpful too.
I went to CBT counseling myself for a year.
So what did you think?
It was life changing for me. I hadn't really heard much about it before I started doing it. And I think just whatever way she, my counselor, made me look at things and talk through things, I was able to kind of talk myself down. If I was having a panic attack, I had the skills to calm myself down, which I didn't have before. Can you just tell us a little bit about actually what CBT is? Because I'm not describing it very well.
No, you're actually, I think that's a perfect description. I think it's based around the fact that we have a lot of negative thought patterns, and a lot of the way you think is actually habit. We don't realize we're in this kind of habit of jumping to negative conclusions. So the classic example they give for CBT, and apologies to any CBT experts out there that I'm about to like destroy what you're really good at, and I'm going to explain it really badly. But so if you're walking down a street and you overhear, you hear your name being mentioned by like a group of people, there's some people who would think, oh, they're, you know, my name was mentioned because they're thinking of inviting me to that party that's on tomorrow night or whatever. Whereas other people, me included, I have to say, would walk down the street and you hear your name and you think, oh God, they saw me fall over like 5 minutes ago and they're talking about that stupid hat I decided to wear or whatever. Like, so, and whereas actually there's no basis for one over the other. It's just your kind of negative, automatic negative thoughts. So CBT tries to give you the tools to recognize what like part of your thinking is automatic and habitual and how to change that. And I'm not explaining it very well, but you're absolutely right. Like, it is life changing. There's loads of evidence. Like, it has been studied and it has been really like shown to be really effective. So I think it's great. And there's CBT for insomnia, which is really useful as well. So you can look up sort of dedicated behavioral therapy for insomnia. So if you're anything like me and you get into bed and your head is like just going round and round and round and you're thinking of all the things you shouldn't have said or you forgot to do or, you know, millions of things you have to do tomorrow or whatever it is, it's really hard to switch off. And CBT is a great way of kind of turning that part of your brain off.
Yeah, it's really amazing. I'll get back to that conversation in just a sec. With everything going on in my life at the moment, I'm honoured to team up with ReproMed this season. I've learned more about ReproMed and what they do over the past couple of years. They pride themselves in taking a personal interest in your care, regardless of where you are on your fertility journey. ReproMed.ie is packed full of information on TSI, IUI, IVF, egg donation, fertility preservation, and more. A consultation with their team, which you can book on ReproMed.ie, will provide you with everything you need to know about treatment options in a supportive, honest environment. Now, back to my conversation. And when it comes to stress, does stress play a part in making symptoms any worse?
I certainly think your tolerance of symptoms is going to be worse if you're feeling really stressed. I'm not sure that they've studied the impact of stress. Although in saying that, I know they've shown that in women with high stress jobs or in a workplace that might be considered a high stress environment, they're often more symptomatic, and that the opposite is true. So there probably is a lot of basis to that. Yeah. But like your ability to even just cope with being tired, being irritable, and then even the physical symptoms like the joint aches and pains and different things that we see happen with menopause, it's going to be harder to kind of to tolerate that and to get on with things when, you know, if you're adding in stress on top of everything. Stress makes everything worse, really, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And when it comes to hot flushes, then what exactly happens? I've experienced hot flushes before. I went into menopause just for 6 months when I was sick. And I think before I would have, if my mum was at the back door, like fanning herself, you know, you just have a giggle and say, oh, she's got the hot flushes again. Mm-hmm. And then when I actually experienced it myself, I was like, this is not funny. It's no laughing matter. It's like your blood turns to lava. It's so overwhelming. So what is actually going on inside your body when that happens?
So your thermostat in your brain, so the part of your brain that basically is thermoregulatory, so it tries to keep you in a healthy temperature range, seems to be affected by this drop in estrogen. But what's really interesting is we don't really understand the physiology of hot flushes. There are other hormones involved. Things like serotonin seem to have a role to play as well. So something happens that when your hormones change, that little kind of thermostat in your brain essentially goes, it falsely thinks that you're the wrong temperature, and it tries to correct that. And so it actually thinks you're too hot. And so it tries to cool you down by opening up all your blood vessels, by bringing, you know, making you sweat, bringing all of that heat to the surface. So you flush. What's interesting as well is that it can be associated with this, I think, called an autonomic reaction. So you actually get like anxiety for a lot of women accompanying a hot flush. So they might describe, like, I get this sensation of heat rising from their tummy or rising from their neck and right up into their head. And then they get this dreadful sweat, which can be, for some women, can be like drenching, like having to change their clothes almost. And then for a lot of women, it's accompanied with this sense of almost dread or anxiety, like their heart is racing and they feel this kind of acute anxiety. And then it passes. So it usually only lasts for a minute or two at most, but it's a spectrum. Some women might get it once or twice a day. Others, like I've talked to women who are literally having this happen every 15, 20 minutes over the kind of literal 24-hour course of the day. So all night, all day.
God, that's so tough, isn't it?
Mm.
I think it's, first of all, it's so great that the conversation is happening around perimenopause and menopause, and especially for the men in our life. I think for them to be educated in this too, and to be able to offer support at home, is very important.
Just, I think, understanding what is happening and understanding that, a bit like with puberty, your hormones are kind of are fluctuating, they're changing. And then, you know, when you do have your final period and you completely lose your estrogen, it's like inhabiting a different body. Like you've lost this hormone that's so essential for all these different parts of you. So I think the psychological impact of going through that is underestimated. Mm-hmm. And accepting aging, which is something that, like, in the media and society and all that, we're constantly told to not age, like fight it and, you know, fight the signs of aging. And it's this constant reiteration of this message that we're not allowed to age. And unfortunately, as you go through menopause, it really drives it home. Like I can't, you know, have any more pregnancies. My periods have stopped. And you tend to lose maybe some of the collagen or elasticity in your skin. You can get vaginal dryness. You get joint aches and pains. People say all the time to me, you know, it's like I woke up a couple of years ago and felt 10 years older. So that's really frustrating, especially when you're constantly told to kind of fight against this aging process, which is so ridiculous when you think about it. It's like, yeah, we're all aging. It should be, you know, not saying I love my wrinkles and my gray hair. I don't, but like, I sort of resent that I don't, because I'm delighted to kind of, you know, be this age and be getting older. And I sort of hate that I hate it, if that makes sense.
I so understand what you're saying there. And I think I surrendered a little bit to that when I got sick and I was faced with this kind of unknown. And then it's such a pleasure to turn a year older every year. And I think when you look at the blue zones, the pockets of blue zones across the world, and these little pockets of society where growing older is embraced, and you'd see great grandmothers with their great grandchildren a lot, and then putting them together is almost keeping older people young, and yeah. they embrace getting older. But it is, it's such a thing that I suppose in society we're all fighting it.
And I wonder, do men have the same like sense of dread and resentment and experience of aging as women do? And I don't think they do, to be honest. I don't think, and they obviously don't go through this kind of dramatic change that women go through, you know. So like crossing that bridge is, it is a huge psychological leap or psychological, you know, hurdle to get over. And then you add in all these kind of physical thing and physical changes that happen as well. And it really sort of drills at home to you that like, okay, I've changed and my body has changed. And so there's a lot of acceptance, I think, and maybe some grief is probably the wrong word, but like sort of accepting the loss of something as well, the loss of reproduction, the loss of, you know, not youth, I don't mean it like that, but just the, you know, accepting that things are changing can be really, really difficult. But I don't think men are faced with anything so dramatic at any point in their lives. So it's hard for partners or husbands or friends or brothers or whoever it might be to understand that, I think, if they're not going through it.
Yeah. And I think that's why it's so important to understand it or be able to go to a menopause clinic and have a chat. It may make you feel less lonely in that journey, because I think I certainly remember, like, when I think of the menopause that I went through, it's almost like I'd wake up in my bed and feel like a stone, you know. I just felt glazed over, like, and obviously I was dealing with other things, so I didn't put it down to that this is the menopause, but I just remember feeling so different in my heart and soul. I felt like I was different. That's so tough.
It is. And I suppose you don't have to feel that way. And I agree about it being lonely. And I think a lot of that is to do with not wanting to talk about it. And I'm not out there advocating that like we should all meet up for coffee and do nothing but talk about our periods or lack thereof and talk about our vaginas going dry and talk about, like, I'm not advocating that. But like, some conversation doesn't mean it has to be the only conversation, but at least have some conversation, normalize it. You know, yeah. That's what women are actually great at, is, you know, empathizing with each other. But one of the barriers, unfortunately, to that is because, as you pointed out at the beginning, it's such an individual process. And it can be quite lonely for someone who comes in and she might say to me, you know, I have two sisters or I have a couple of friends and they had they don't know what I'm talking about. They flew through the menopause, which is great. But it can be very isolating for women to think I'm doing something wrong here, or that somehow it's their fault if they're really symptomatic and struggling. And it really isn't. It's like the way some, you know, when you start having periods and you're in school and some girls have dreadfully painful periods. It's not their fault. They're not doing anything. It's genetic. It's just we're all built differently. So, it can be very lonely.
Yeah, everyone's journey is so different. And I think a really good place to start is to like acknowledge that something is happening to you. And I think once you acknowledge it, then you can find a way to accept it. And then you can move on to the next step where you maybe heal or you grow or you're willing to go through this next chapter. So when someone comes to your clinic, Dr. Hartley, what can they expect? Do you kind of figure out what symptoms they have and talk them through what's happening and try to educate them?
Yeah, I think we start with, as you know, because of this individuality, I think it's nice to start with what are the specific issues for this person who's sitting in front of me? Like, what are their concerns? Because I might be concerned about X, Y, or Z from a kind of doctor, like medical perspective or whatever, but actually they've come in worried about something totally different. Or I might think, oh, we have to treat your hot flushes, but they're sitting there thinking the hot flushes aren't bothering me at all, but I have no libido, you know, or whatever it might be. So I think establishing what their goals are and what their current issues are is the most important thing. And we work backwards from there. So I usually take a full history, like you would in any, you know, medical consultation. So we go through their specific risk factors, their family history, their own medical history, their medication, etc. And then usually we talk about things like lifestyle and you know, what changes they could make, and especially for their long-term health, which becomes so important at the time of menopause as well, and what changes they might make to influence that. We talk about screening. So I usually ask women about mammogram screening and cervical smear screening and STD screening and all that kind of thing. Maybe contraception. I think that's something that baffles a lot of women, quite rightly, because it baffles a lot of, you know, doctors too, about what's the right kind of approach to contraception and birth control when you're in the perimenopause. And then we talk about, you know, any questions they might have specifically, and then come up with a management plan together. Like, what would suit this person sitting in front of me?
Oh, that sounds so brilliant, because I think knowledge is power, and to meet one on one with someone and get all of this down on paper and just really kind of understand where you're at is so valuable. Do you think that women who maybe have been through breast cancer or ovarian cancer have something to worry about when it comes to menopause? Or
I suppose it depends if you're talking about what types of treatment and management options are there for women who have a history of lots of different types of medical illness. We have to take that into account when you're talking about kind of going, you know, going forward and how you're going to manage something. Obviously, if with a history of breast cancer, you're talking about mammogram screening. And if we are talking about something like HRT or medication, I think it's really important that whoever you're seeing, whether it's your GP or me or a different menopause specialist, but you should try and link in with the team that have looked after this person. Like, there should be more communication and a multi kind of discipline approach to treating anything. I think it's just communication is so important. So I would always try and link in with somebody's specialist in the hospital, so everybody's kind of on the same page then. But certainly the treatment options are, they change, or we discuss them, I suppose, slightly differently in someone depending on their medical history.
Yeah. And when it comes to HRT, you said earlier in the podcast that there's a lot of misinformation about HRT. Do you think people are, you know, they've heard things and they're a little bit afraid of it?
Definitely. Like my own mother, you know, would have been terrified at the thought of HRT, because so like the history would be, you know, back in the late 90s, early 2000s, there were a couple of really, really big studies, one in particular that was done in the States, and they released the results in the early 2000s, and basically it was kind of splashed all over the medical journals that HRT causes breast cancer. And that was sort of, there was a big full stop at the end of it, and that was it. And so a whole generation of women, like HRT prescription fell by 80% or something in the first 2 years after that was published. So a whole generation of women were taken off HRT and told, you can't have any, like, put up with your symptoms, and that's kind of the end of the conversation. Which I suppose at the time was the right thing to do, because they were going on, that was the information, that was the best information they had. So if you kind of go forward then another 10 years, they've gone back and re-examined those studies, because they were really, really big scales. There was lots of data. So they went back and re-examined them or reanalyzed them. And now what we know is, number one, the women that were in those studies were older than the average woman we would be prescribing HRT for. So they were over the age of 60 on average, and they had other risk factors for things like breast cancer. So the study, they didn't set out to see, is there a link between HRT and breast cancer? It wasn't designed that way. It was only when they went back, they looked and saw, actually, you know, you've misinterpreted this a little bit. We're looking at the wrong age of woman here. So when they looked at women who were under 60 were within 10 years of their last period, their breast cancer risk was slightly lower. And the other change is that nowadays we actually prescribe hormones that are totally different to the hormones that would have been prescribed in those studies. So things have moved on.
Yeah.
Totally different risks now. There is still a small increased risk of breast cancer with some forms of HRT, although not all forms of HRT. And so it's really important to take the time to counsel someone about that. And usually I'll be telling someone, if they have no other risk factor for breast cancer and they're within 10 years of their last period, they're under 60, they want to start, you know, this kind of modern version of HRT that we have, the risk of breast cancer won't really establish itself until they've taken 4 or 5 years of HRT. And even at that, it's somewhere equivalent to drinking 1 or 2 glasses of wine a day. So, you know, 7 to 14 units per week will increase your risk of breast cancer the same amount as HRT. So it's not, you can't downplay it, but it's often just a balance of, look, what are you going to benefit? Especially in terms of health, people kind of forget there's health benefits of HRT too.
Yeah.
And you trade that off against risk, and you take it on an annual year by year conversation then.
And HRT, hormone replacement therapy, what exactly is it?
So your ovaries produce three hormones, so estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone. But if you look at the kind of trend of those hormones, you lose estrogen and progesterone around the time of menopause. We're all losing, our testosterone levels are falling from usually kind of early 30s onwards for all women, but it's a really gradual fall in testosterone. There's no kind of dramatic fall like we'd see with estrogen and progesterone. So most hormone replacement therapy is based around replacing estrogen. That's the hormone that's going to make you feel better, improves your skin and your hair and your mood and your vaginal symptoms and the whole shebang, the whole shooting gallery, hopefully. So estrogen is kind of where it's at, you know. The problem is if you still have a womb, so if you're someone who has not had a hysterectomy and I give you estrogen, you're going to feel great in all these other ways and it will have all these beneficial effects, but it will encourage the lining of your womb to thicken. And over time, that can lead to some abnormal cells in your womb. So we give you a second hormone called progesterone. And progesterone will protect that those changes from happening in your womb. So most HRT is a combination of estrogen and progesterone. And then there's certain circumstances we might replace testosterone, but that's not for everybody.
Right. And would you be put on HRT in perimenopause or do you wait until the full menopause?
So that's really controversial. So there's different ways of approaching perimenopause. So again, if you go back to like, you know, you're not really deficient necessarily when you're in perimenopause. It's not that you're not producing anything, but you're trying to find a bit of stability, trying to kind of slow the roller coaster down so that your body's not kind of panicking when it's hitting, you know, low points of estrogen. It's like, oh, I'm kind of running out of estrogen here and there. And then it panics and it overproduces. And then you kind of ping pong between those two levels. So sometimes small doses of estrogen and progesterone can level that out a little bit. For women who need contraception or birth control and who don't have any other risk factors for getting a blood clot, so they're not, you know, they don't get migraines, they've a body mass index below 30, they don't smoke, etc. They may be able to take the birth control pill. And that can actually have a similar effect. So that will control your cycle. It should improve some PMS symptoms with the added benefit of giving you some, I suppose, some regulation to your bleeding, which can be helpful as well, and birth control on top of it. But it just depends on the individual.
Yeah, I've learned so much from this conversation. Thank you so much for coming on today. I've no doubt that I'll be into your clinic over the next couple of years. So I'm wishing you all the best of luck in the world with it. I'm sure you'll do so well.
Thanks a million. It was a pleasure. It was great to talk to you, Georgie. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Good Glow Health with thanks to ReproMed. If you did enjoy this conversation, I would appreciate so much if you left me a review, and thank you so much for tuning in. This season of the podcast will be brought to you every Monday and Thursday over the next 4 weeks. So thanks again for tuning in, and I'll talk to you on Thursday.